This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Welcome. Hi there, Richard.
Nice to have you with us, Safia. In this first half hour of our business skills conversation, it is brought to you in association with USB Ed. Last week, we spoke to Belinda Dustin of the Sadar Group on entrepreneurial failure, how to handle this from a legal and governance environment perspective. Today's theme is once again our focus on ethics. Remember the hashtag, keeping ethics alive, all one word, is understanding workplace ethics. Joining us in studio is our guest, Cynthia Schumann of the Ethics Monitor. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Well, what can I say? It's the month of revelations of workplace issues.
Indeed.
Let's call it that.
Like we're getting whiplash from going from article to article.
Article to article, yeah. You know, like breaking news, corporate X is responsible for this breach of corporate governance when it comes to paying off certain families, etc. I mean, workplace ethics just in the spotlight when we put together our profile for the show over the few months we're going to be dealing with this, with the question of ethics, and this was on the agenda for this month. We could never have known that this was going to be the month of revelations around our friends from McKinsey's, KPMG, SAP. And I'm, honestly, I don't mind naming them when I say I'm bitterly disappointed as a member of the South African community and as a member of the business community, brands that I have definitely held in high regard, and I see these type of things happening, and I go, oh my goodness, this is troublesome.
Yes,
I mean, when it comes to workplace ethics, I mean, the statement that you made was there's really a common understanding of workplace ethics within an organization. And the focus on workplace ethics is generally not clear enough. And I think to myself, wow, when I see them suspending CEOs and CFOs, of SAP South Africa,
yes,
from the international companies doing the suspension, when I see the CEO of McKinsey's South Africa being suspended, I go, wow, or placed on leaves of absence and the likes, I go, wow, is the, let's call it that, organizational dynamic so dysfunctional on these on an international company with its local presence here that this is what it's come to? I mean, give me your insights here, Cynthia, as a starting point. I mean, just how does this happen?
I know. I mean, and I promise you, we didn't get here by mistake, unfortunately. I think a first comment before we get into understanding workplace ethics is that I think your point is so well made that while we can be outraged by the examples you've just mentioned, we can also quickly add how these are being addressed. There are executives who've flown out from the States. A whole management team has been put on suspension. And while that doesn't mean that the problem is now okay, I do think in dealing with it decisively is a very important step. And unfortunately, the same cannot always be said of the scandals that we're seeing in the public sector and in the state-owned companies.
Well, I mean, I look at the response that we're seeing, as you say, from SAP and McKinsey's. And then I look at the response we have from our friends, Bell Pottinger.
Indeed.
And I can only but say, I'm sorry, Bell Pottinger, that is just not good enough.
Exactly.
Especially given what their core business is.
Exactly.
Yes.
That blows my mind.
Yes.
It is rather frightening that the communications and spin doctor specialists don't know when the audience is angry.
Yes.
That's very scary. And perhaps, if I may suggest, that should inform anybody who potentially thinks of retaining them in the future that they actually are, if they're not good at managing their own brand and reputation, perhaps you shouldn't be doing business with them. Sorry, that's my plug for them not doing any more business. As far as I'm concerned, somebody like Bell Pottinger should go the same way as Enron.
Yes.
Thanks very much. thanks for playing. Goodbye.
Yes.
You know, you are the weakest link in the fabric of society, and you deserve to leave the island. Or, sorry, am I mixing my shows here?
But you get the point. Yes, you get the point.
You know, you are the weakest link. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yes.
You are the worst part of society in terms of what you've done.
Mm.
Thanks very much. You get off the island because the rest of us are not happy with where it's at.
But for me, if we're looking at understanding workplace ethics, I think the Bill Pottinger example speaks so very clearly to what do you actually value in your business most? Mm. Do you value behaving ethically and the sound reputation that goes with that? Or are you just chasing the money? And I think in their case, the answer is very blunt. They were getting a great monthly fee and they were prepared to do whatever it took. And I think that that's a core question that organizations need to be saying. Of course, we understand that private sector organizations have to make a profit. And that's not unethical. That hasn't become improper. But how you pursue making a profit, how you pursue servicing your clients is really either ethical or not. And if you're available for sale to the highest bidder, please understand this is the potential path that goes.
Mm. And for me, it's not just how much fee they make. But I mean, you know, if I came to you and I said, hi, Cynthia, I would like you to, here's a gun. Or he has money for a gun. Please take the gun and shoot Safia over here.
Because, please don't.
No, please don't.
No, I won't.
But this is illustrative only for audience use. Please do not try this at home, audience. But if I came to you and said, please do this for me, and he has the money, or he has money to do this, no amount of money allows you to say, I suspend my value system of the value of human life, and great, the checkbook now outweighs the value of human life. And maybe I'm being a little hopeful here, because I think globally we've seen many examples where human life kind of is a little further down the ranks of other people's understanding and expectations of what they want. But I mean, Bill Pottinger, sorry. Yeah. You know, just unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. But what I really find interesting in all of this is we are all talking about the doers, the people that have got up to these questionable activities. But the benefactors, the people who behind all of this, almost seem to have, I think we've just stopped even talking about Family G. Mm. Because it's just like, it's almost like we've written it off as a, we know, and no one seems to, you know, it doesn't always, it features there, but I think the point is like the indignation of they did it again hasn't really, you know, it doesn't really come out there with, you know, equally weighting your displeasure with McKinsey's and the Guptas, your displeasure with SAP and the Guptas, your displeasure with Bill Pottinger and the Guptas. You know, it's that constancy that, it just makes me think, hey, oi.
I think you raise a really important point there that we need to guard against. And that is because of the absolute almost info overload that we're experiencing at the moment in terms of scandals, there's a very real risk that we almost just become complacent and say, oh, for goodness sake, another one. And we don't go into reading it in particular because it's just the same old story. Now we can say, okay, an understandable response. But then you have to say, but what does that response do in terms of keeping ethics alive, in terms of ensuring that people are behaving ethically? And that response doesn't have to, but it can lend itself to being the first step of the slippery slope of saying, oh, well, everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to workplace ethics, that statement is the most troubling of all. And you know, you do have to look, and whilst I do appreciate the importance of managing one's image and communication, and you do want experts around you to help, and every large corporate does retain communications experts and the likes. Well, you know, when I start listening and looking at what Bell Pottinger does as a company and how far they were willing to go, I kind of go, well, if they're willing to do that for the Guptas, who else are they doing this for?
Indeed.
Okay. So, you know, and the thing that does kind of raise my eyebrows is the Guptas are not their only clients.
In South Africa,
there are many well-known and well-respected names that have been attached to the Bell Pottinger name. And it is slightly concerning to me to say, well, how far was the spin doctoring going elsewhere? And is it purely because the Guptas have obviously crossed that moral fiber line? But quite frankly, it would appear that the Bell Pottinger
client base
and measure of what they're prepared to do is not restrained. So whether it be the Guptas or anybody else who asks them, as you say, everybody's doing it. So why not change your Wikipedia page to suit yourself? Why not manage, you know, via an automated army of tweet bots to manage perceptions? You know, I wonder who else is now sitting back going, I'm a little bit worried about what these guys did on my behalf.
Yes.
And you know, and quite frankly, if they are asking those questions, so should they.
Yeah.
Because, then that we're all in this because we're all as guilty kind of starts to play out. But I mean, when we talk about workplace ethics, we need to get beyond just having conversations about Bell Pottinger, SAP, McKinsey's. We're actually down to people.
Yes.
Because in the workplace, it's all about the individuals that make up the workplace and what they're doing. And I'll never forget, somebody made a comment to me about Enron, and this comment has stuck with me for a long time. They said, anybody who knew some of the executives at Enron would not be surprised at some of the things that happened at Enron. And they made the statement to say, you must realize that people are people. They, in their personal, as they are in their personal lives, so they are in their corporate lives. And their corporate lives are no different or are merely the same reflection of what goes on in their personal space. And these people said they knew the Enron executive in their personal capacities. And so they were not surprised when the Enron scandal erupted, because the nature of the people led them to conclude that it was not unexpected for these sort of things to happen. And I kind of go, well, if that be true, then the question is, as employees, you know, how are people, people in their personal capacities and the values that they have carries through into the workplace. How important is, let's call it, ethical engagement right up front in that, let's call it, the employment space? I'm now employing Safia over here. You're going to come and work with me in my team. I want to understand you as a person and your ethics as an individual, because your ethics are going to become my workplace ethics.
Yes.
As we move forward into an employee relationship. I mean, surely, and I'm starting to ask myself the question, and I probably have never done this, is ethics on my list of questions or on my evaluation criteria as I employ you? And I see Sophia's going, nay, I'm not there.
So I do agree that that's a very important question, but there's something else that I've encountered over and over and over in corporate, even in small business. But we set targets for people.
Mm.
We set reward systems in place.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the environment is a challenging environment. And we almost set people up to do things that is incredibly challenging and potentially compromising. Because A, the targets are high, but we also illustrate that when those targets are reached, we will stop at nothing to reward them.
Mm.
Yeah. So for me, there's two sides to the coin. It's not just assessing the person. It's also about thinking about the processes and the structures you put up inside the organization.
Mm.
They're both crucial factors in terms of workplace ethics.
Let's talk about this.
I think if we start off with the question of different values, I think it's especially true in a country that is diverse as ours. I mean, which diversity, let's quickly add, is a huge strength. But when we have employees coming into our organization, of course there will be those who are coming in with fabulous personal values. But can we please not be naive? Of course, there's also a real possibility that people coming in with quite the opposite values, they're not going to announce it. They're not going to say, listen, this respect, I think it's an optional extra. They're going to put on a facade and say, of course, I think it's important. So for me, one of the key leadership roles relative to ethics and values, and a key focus area of ethics within organizations, should be to engage your employees to build alignment behind the organization's values. Because when one of your employees behaves in an outrageous manner in line with their own personal values, when that post or that tweet goes viral, no one is making the distinction between whether they said it in their personal capacity. It, of course, is, as we've seen countless examples, it of course causes damage for the organization. We're even familiar with the term. It brings the organization into disrepute. So when we're looking at workplace ethics, this should be one of the very clear goals. Our engagement is not about spending 3 days telling you the minutiae of the legislation around something. Yes, get an overall view. But really, to try and ensure as much as we can that even if you're not committed to those values of the organization, let's be clear, they're not a negotiation. You will comply with them.
For me, the conversation around values is a conversation that happens every single day. You know, I firmly believe that if you want to add great value to the market, you have to have a great culture in your organization.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a great culture in your organization, you have to have great relationships.
Yes.
And to have great relationships, you've got to have powerful conversations on a regular basis. And it's the content of those conversations that determine whether or not you bring your culture to life or whether you kill your culture. So every time you're asking someone to make a decision, you should almost have woven into that conversation a touch point or a reference to, is it value-based? Is it value-driven? Values-driven?
Yes.
Is it a reflection? When we make this decision, when we reward this person in this particular way, when we set this target, when we help this person and support this person to achieve that target, are we doing it in compliance with our values?
I think you make such an important point. And here, I was dealing with a client, I'm obviously not going to mention which one, but dealing with a client at a senior level. And of course, I'd done my homework before I met with the client. I went through every piece of documentation I could find in the public domain. Ask me if ethics was anywhere in there. Not to be found. I said to them, but if you're now telling me that you're holding up ethics and an ethical culture as a hugely desirable outcome, I've got that. But is everyone meant to work this out by osmosis? Because it's nowhere to be seen. So your point around saying this should be part of our conversation, not just the once a year where we somehow grudgingly have a half-day training program. It should be core to saying, is this in line with what we stand for?
Yeah, and for me it's also, you can't have your ethics in your policy documents under the heading ethics. It's got to be interwoven with every single policy that you have so that it is just how we do things in this company.
Yeah, if I may be so bold to say this, you know what? No one needs an instruction manual in the workplace that says, okay, everyone, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. It's part of human, that's part of the human nature and anatomy. And if ethics don't get to that level, we fundamentally have some challenges here.
So I agree with you. I do agree with you. But I'm not naive, and I don't believe that everyone has the same kind of rounding and grounding and the same kind of orientation. We are, when we get to the workplace, we're an accumulation of a gazillion different people with different backgrounds and different moral and ethical compasses. Mm. We also have different appetites for what is okay and what is not okay.
Well, and I want to just I want to stop your line of thinking here and take you back to your earlier line of thought around how the organization structures an engagement around, let's call them, reward and measurement criteria and processes, because that is fundamental. If your business says we believe in X, but hey, when, you know, we believe in following the rules of the game. However, when you get on the field, it's no rules American rugby here, or, you know, Australian touch. Let's go.
Yes.
Okay. There's nothing that you're not allowed to do. And I think that for me, and I agree with Safi on that one, is, you know, when you say that, you know, you reward performance and you reward people achieving budget and achieving a target, and you don't say to them, or you say to them, that's what you need to get done, they will then get that done. And if that means that they maybe skirt close to the ethical line or cross the line, even, how are you going to know? And is it going to matter?
And I don't care, because it is the company's responsibility to create the boundaries that serves that particular company.
Indeed. But Matt, here, can you see that your point speaks to, again, the fact that we cannot naively assume that everyone is entering the organization with a perfect set of values. So workplace ethics is one core and an hugely important focus area. Is ensuring that ongoing engagement, conversation, call it what you will, that is aimed at building alignment behind the values that are considered acceptable in the workplace. Adding to that, I'd like to highlight another feature that I think is so important in terms of workplace ethics. And I say this irrespective of people coming in with different values. And that is that in the vast, vast majority of cases, employees already know the difference between right and wrong. There's very rarely the person who walks off with your new cell phone, or the person who's, you know, I don't know, defrauding the company. They didn't pinch your cell phone by mistake. They didn't, when they pinched the company's money, they didn't have a moment of consideration of, is it actually my money? No, they knew it wasn't. And so I always stress the point that the knowledge of what is right and wrong is almost never the problem in terms of ethics. Unethical behavior does not follow because of a lack of knowledge. Unethical behavior follows because someone made a different choice. And the point that highlights, excuse me, the point that highlights is that what you're dealing with is a knowing-doing gap.
So, I mean, fundamentally, I mean, if I think of what you're saying there and the whole principle of knowing right and wrong, I mean, I think that is so true. If you think back to, let's just think to some of the examples we've seen, okay? Taking money from, you know, somebody in like, let's call it commissions, for, you know, for a contract. Is that right or wrong? I mean, Safia, if I offered you okay,
really challenged by this idea that people know what is right and people fundamentally know what is wrong, because when we know something is right or wrong, but we are rewarded for a particular kinds of behavior. Our ability to understand, or our understanding what is right and wrong, starts to decay and fragment. Indeed. And it doesn't happen in one foul swoop. Mm. So it happens over a period of time where, you know, you've got movies like The Wolf of Wall Street, Barbarians at the Gate. We see that people go from being quite clear on what is right, what is wrong, and over the period of time, through exposure to reward systems in the organizations.
Yes.
They start to go to the dark side.
I know you love that, the dark side comment.
Yeah. And by the time they reach the dark side, what was once common sense to them has become uncommon sense to them because the crowd that they hang out with has a new kind of common sense.
I think that that is the crucial qualifier to saying that ethics is essentially about a knowing-doing gap. As I say, in the vast majority of cases, not all the time the knowledge is there.
Yeah.
It doesn't automatically flow into doing. What is in the middle space there is choice. And as you say, that choice can be influenced by my personal values, but it can also very much be influenced by the reward system. I think Wells Fargo was a classic example. But, you know, I'd like to use an even a darker example. And that is, and a very, very tough one, is that when you're in a job and your superior gives you an instruction to do something unethical, yes, you can complain, but tell me, what are the consequences? Now, if you're in a high trust company, this is probably not going to happen. But if you're in, and we can think of lots of examples, I unfortunately have heard this come up quite regularly in public sector organizations. And we know it happens, where it's literally an instruction. I don't care who the best candidate is. This person gets the job. This person gets the tender. And that is not a reward system, but it is a threat of saying, and if you don't do it, please understand, you will be victimized. You will be compromised in terms of rewards or benefits or the like. And we've seen it play out in the media. This is not conspiracy theory. This has happened, and I think that that's a very, very tough facet. And I've had someone stand up, a number of people stand up in the workshop and say, Cynthia, let me tell you, I absolutely know what I'm doing is wrong. But let me also tell you that I'm a single parent. I not only support my children, but I support all my brother's children and my parents as well. I need this job.
That's a very tough position to find oneself in. And
it's just biology is against us as human beings. We are herd animals. We want to be part of the community we are part of, and we don't want to stand out like sore thumbs. It's incredibly courageous of people to do things that is not what the tribe does.
And I think just on that, as we draw to a close on our show, we're going to have an opportunity. We're going to be speaking next to the mayor of Midvale in the next part of our show. And I'd like to pose this particular question to him in that space of how does he see people treating things like this? Because I think when you look at executive leadership, that's where you truly look and say, well, when this happens, what do they do? And how do they treat the people? You know, if that tender is being forced in a particular direction, what is the executive doing? And unfortunately, at a workplace ethics level, if the executive is not setting the tone, as they say, the fish rots from the head down, yes, and you end up with the challenges that you do.
Yes.
Cynthia, it's been great chatting to you. As always, this is our monthly feature on ethics in the workplace. Please remember our hashtag keeping ethics alive. Something that we're looking to push out there quite aggressively. Next up is our business conversation. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.